also indicated before we start that I received an anonymous correspondence from somebody raising issues around the human resource management issue only yesterday. But I will discuss it with the chairperson of the portfolio committee, Comrade Bloom, and see how we take it forward. But for today, it's on the annual report. And without much ado, I'll hand over to my Group 2 convener, Comrade Samwana.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to be as brief as possible. My questions will be based on the internal control in the annual report of the Auditor General. It is very clear, according to the AG's report, that the internal control of activities is very weak, in the sense that the first thing is the documents regarding assets, staff debts, and medical expenditure are not available, were not available for the AG for examination. Secondly, the documentation and record keeping for staff debts and medical expenditure are not properly managed and updated. What has the department put in place as this has been identified to correct and have an improved handling of these issues? Do we have any plans in place that this would be the last time that we are having this type of a report? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. Perhaps to acknowledge the good wishes that I've received from members with my appointment. In fact, as I speak today, I've been in this position for 6 months as accounting officer, but as you correctly pointed out, Chairperson, and I want to acknowledge that I've been appointed from inside the EQS, previously having worked as the Commissioner for KwaZulu-Natal as well as the Commissioner for Gauteng, and in an acting capacity at different stages in the corporate services environment since I joined DCS about 3 years ago. So I'm stepping in here fully aware of some of the
difficulties. I think you might as well.
But Chairperson, in responding to the question to say that indeed it's been quite a serious concern over a number of years that we as a department have been experiencing these weak controls. I don't want to go down too far in history, but I think just to put it in context slightly, largely emanating from the fact that we have been operating as a militarized department, shifting to a department that had to move towards the provisions of the Public Service Act. And that process itself required that some of the military-like orders that we've had in place over many years had to be translated into policies and procedures. Now, I think I need to add that given the number of years since we started with that process, there's no excuse for that process not to have been concluded. But you will see in our annual report and otherwise that the challenge of changing our A orders and B orders has been what's been keeping us busy in order to put in place that macro environment and to get our staff to understand the new ethos that's required. That's the first point to contextualize it. We have been saying that we cannot constantly use that as an excuse. We need to move from that process of changing our policies and procedures to really not only implementing through training our staff, getting the right people in place, but also to ensure that we have verifiable information that will enable us to hold managers and supervisory staff accountable. So that's been a very strong focus, Shepherd, and I need to say one of the first things that happened since my appointment was the fact that, in fact, prior to, my appointment, a number of things that I've introduced. Firstly, I've had some individual engagements with the Accountant General to also learn from the Office of the Accountant General what, from their point of view, they thought were some of the reasons why we were continuing to experience these problems, and from their point of view, what some of the strategies would be for us to achieve the turnaround. And they've been quite helpful from that series of engagements, and I want to acknowledge the commitment from the Office of the Accountant General to support us. The second issue that I've done was to also negotiate with the Office of the Auditor General to, and they've also been quite helpful to say that their role is not necessarily to point out these internal control weaknesses, but also to help us to find solutions. And they've been quite helpful to the extent that they've developed a training manual and actively also participated in the training of some of our junior and middle management. Thirdly, I want to also say that we have acknowledged in the past that most of the reasons for this perpetual report or negative reporting that we've received is because up to now we've seen that managers are not really taking responsibility, and you will recall at the last meeting of SCOPA in March, this committee insisted that regional commissioners should accompany the accounting officer. In fact, they were here in order to overcome that dilemma. I've taken it a step forward since my appointment by convening a senior management conference, and I called all senior managers together. And what we did was to look at those weaknesses pointed out in all previous reports of the Auditor General, and to get them to themselves from the lowest level upwards to define the parameters for our new compliance improvement plan that will address these things from the lower level up. So they've been developing this plan, but more importantly, Chairperson, they have also committed themselves personally to this plan. What I said at that meeting was, in fact, to say that where we have been weak as a department, and being a large department, we've had a tendency to shift people around when they do not perform. I have said that will come to an end, and there will be consequences. So I've also announced at that meeting that where managers are not able to perform, there must be competency assessments, we must use the provision that the public service is making available, and begin to address the issue of managerial responsibility in a very decisive way. So that's on a on a very broad level.
Okay. Let's park it there.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My second question, and I'm actually hoping that what has been put in front of us now is that it's going to ensure that it might be the last time you're asking this question about this issue that I've raised just now. My second question, Chairperson, is there are no monthly reconciliation on such debts that is in the Auditor General's report. How are you going to monitor these debts if they are not reconciled? Also, don't you think there can be a possibility of corruption led by low monitoring? This also includes the page 78 under monitoring control on the paragraph that says management does have a strategy in place to ensure that ongoing monitoring is effective, but this is not being applied effectively with regard to asset management and debt management. Can I get a response?
Thank you, Chair. Again, we concur with the findings of the Auditor General in this regard, Chairperson. And briefly, just to put it in context.
What is this called, brief and pointed?
Yes. Just in terms of the context, you will recall that the major part of this staff that relates to the Judge White Commission in terms of what transpired in the TBB space, where people were promoted illegally and we had to then capture these things. So I'm saying that's an important recognition because in our discussion with the Auditor General, part of our strategy must be to try and define these different challenges of debt. Some of them old debt that continues to be the main reason why we continue to have problems.
But I mean, Commissioner, if they are old debt, why is there no solution to to revolving this debt, hiding them off or getting the money back from, you know, from the staff?
Yes, Chair, indeed, those are processes involve both an attempt to get it written off some of the old debt, and you will see in our report that we have actually succeeded in doing so. And the second part of the strategy is, of course, to make sure that we start accelerate the payments on some of these debts. Another part, other parts of it is really just poor administration, I have to admit, and since this matter has been reported, we have tried to put in place teams to fast-track the corrective measures, including what was found by the Auditor General, poor record-keeping of staff debt, including the failure on the part of managers to make sure that there's a checklist, the checklist is implemented, and that staff do not exit our system prior to them having cleared their debt. So those are human errors that we have set. Firstly, through training and putting better systems in place, we need to improve. More importantly, to focus on writing off of staff debt, but also to look at some other mechanisms and linking our systems directly, for instance, to the Government Employees Pension Fund, where they have a better tracking system, particularly with regard to recouping these debts from pensions of people who have exited.
But maybe to focus more on a question, no monthly reconciliation of staff debts is done. Has that changed? Are monthly reconciliations being done now or not? Or is it still a problem?
Chairperson, there is, as I said, we do have staff teams in place and their job is to focus on the issue of reconciliation.
But are they doing their job? Okay. I have the team, but if they are not doing their job.
Can I just check with my team the extent to which they have achieved that?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. In terms of looking at the staff debt, what we did was to categorize them, and the first priority that we had put, looking at the materiality globally in terms of the categories, was the Judge White Commission. On that part, we have reconciled the Judge White in terms of what is sitting on per staff system and what is sitting on bus system. So the capital amounts were actually reconciled between the two systems, and we're able then to recover. And so far, we have reconciled to say that from the Judge White cases, we're able to recover an amount of about 5 million in terms of that one. But we still have challenges in terms of the other categories of debts. If you look at saying that the holistically all the debts are being reconciled on a monthly basis, the answer to holistically no, but only to the category of Judge White that has been able to look at the deduction codes, correct those, and everything.
All right. So the long and the short of it is that monthly reconciliations are not yet being done.
Not on all categories, on Judge White.
Let's take Judge White out of the way. That one you have answered it successfully. In relation to the remainder, monthly reconciliations are not as yet being done.
Yes, Chair Person. That is part of the process that we have.
Okay. All right. Yes, Comrade. Yes.
Thanks, Chair Person. Lastly, in regards to reporting on performance information, on page 59, it is clearly indicated that the department is facing a challenge on recruitment and retention of social workers. Secondly, inability to recruit and retain healthcare professional, having been able to identify these challenges, do we have any plans of how to deal with them and have a better future?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Indeed, it is a problem. We are struggling to retain particularly healthcare personnel. Again, Chairperson, just to make the statement that in the, over the last 2 years we've received from Treasury two amounts, 60 million in the previous financial year and another 54 million last year, the year under review. And that money was meant to create and finance funds, particularly of these professionals needed to implement the white paper. So I'm saying that because it's important. You will see there's a considerable growth in numbers of finance folks, and therefore that would also push up the vacancy rate. Secondly, we're quite aware that within DCA, we have had problems of an outflow of professionals, and this particularly became acute after we phased out the payment of overtime for Saturday and Sunday work. It is a known fact that many of our professionals over weekends also worked, you know, to did custodial duties, and thereby they've managed to earn another income to supplement their existing income. So that in itself was a retention strategy. When that was phased out and they were prohibited, that inflow was just accelerated. To answer the question whether we have a strategy in place, indeed, we do have a strategy to retain scarce skills, targeting particularly these categories. We're looking at a number of different innovations in our human resource strategy. We have said we're developing centers of expertise where we begin to look at different conditions under which we can employ these professionals. We have looked at possibility of outsourcing where we know we're going to have difficulty to attract staff, as is the case with pharmacists. We are looking at possibility of remunerating our staff differently in addition to the occupation-specific dispensation that DPSA has introduced for the public service in general. Within correctional services, we recognize that there are other impediments that face us that we have to overcome. So we're looking at ways in which to both retain what we've got and attract staff, because you will agree with us.
No. Let's leave it at that. You're looking at means and ways to retain staff. And you are still looking for those means and ways, or do you already have the strategy in place?
I have said that we do have a strategy, Chairperson, and okay. I've also indicated what some of the interventions are that we're busy implementing. The issues I can give some of the detail of what's contained in our strategy, but occupational specific dispensation is one, the issue of centers of expertise, the issue of counter offers, headhunting framework, those are things that we have to do.
Alright, okay. I'm not sure if I might not have heard your response to this one, if it was asked. From the auditor's perspective, it seems that they do have challenges when they have to access documentation from the department. It takes extraordinarily, extremely long delays. What's the cause of this challenge? And are we going to see a change? Or what measures have been put in place to obviate this challenge?
Thank you, Chair. It is extremely worrying. DCS, in discussion with the Auditor General, DCS is fairly decentralized. And I think it's that decentralization that often makes it quite difficult for people to respond timely to requests for documentation from the Auditor General. I'm not saying that's an excuse. The question, of course, is what is it that we plan to do? In my discussion with the Auditor General, I have said that I'm quite keen to establish in my own office a nodal point where we can make sure that any request forwarded to the AG is followed up promptly, and where we can, on a very high level, take action if people fail to do so. In most instances, and I'm sure the Auditor General will concur, that information is available. but people don't seem to understand the urgency, and that's the message that we have to put across.
Mm, I do see that they also talk about the control activities in relation to whether it be assets, sub-debt, or medical expenditure. They are in place but are not applied appropriately, which means monitoring and control is not to the level that is supposed to be. That is, there is some element of laxity within the senior levels in terms of management, and I think it would relate to this laissez-faire or lax attitude in relation to the request for documents or this and that. I do know that after our last hearing, we requested a list of the officials who were negotiating on behalf of the department for the public-private partnership prisons. It did appear that the documentation was a problem to locate in terms of who were the officials who were negotiating for the department. So I think it is an area that you most definitely need to check up. Comrade, are you done? All right. Thank you very much. Comrade Vincent?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just to follow up on the previous discussion, controls or lack thereof, I want to refer the accounting officer, the commissioner, to page 139 of the annual report, page 139 of the annual report, just to indicate why I think we have these problems. Critical occupation, and if you look at finances on page 139, you've got a vacancy rate of finance and economic related 30%, almost. You have a vacancy on financial and related professionals, 42%. Are we together? Page 139. Yes. I want to submit that that's part of your problem. That if in these key areas that the Auditor General looks at, we have a 30% vacancy rate, then that's the problem that we have. You were talking about health vacancies, and that's fine. But if you don't have financially trained people, and I'm not talking about CA, financially trained people, then you're going to have the problems that you have. I just want to raise that point to emphasize it, but I'm sure we'll get back to it. Let me start by going to your appropriation account, page 87. In 2006, you had 257 million rand underspent. This year you've got 580 million rand underspent. So it's not that this department doesn't have financial resources. It can't be that you don't have financial resources if you are saving 580 million rand. It goes back to what I said earlier on. You don't have the people. You don't have the people. And you need to get correctly trained or people with the correct attitude, I think. Because you can't come and tell us that it's a resource problem. And you know, I know departments are very wary of overspending. But underspending is as critical as overspending because it's just a lack of services. Can you explain to us, how do you account for 580 million rand underspending for the year? Is there any reason why you're underspending by 580 million rand?
Thank you, Chair. first, I have to submit indeed that it is true that we do have a problem in the area of finance and supply chain management. Mr. Smith, it's actually a bit worse than what you've said, because in addition to the fact that we have the vacancy rate, by virtue of the fact that we are a security institution, you also see a tendency on the part of management whenever there is a crisis of people not turning up to deploy these people who are supposed to do these kinds of administrative functions, to serve their primary function. So I'm really just saying to you, my reading is that it's a bit worse than merely looking at the vacancy rate. The question about what it is that we're doing about the Chairperson, we on the one hand, we have started to recruit large numbers, and the CDC corporate services can reflect on the actual numbers around finance and supply chain management and the levels that we're talking about, including the strengthening of supervisory and junior management level. I've negotiated with Treasury for them to allow me to appoint in excess of 500 and finance in excess of 500 junior and middle management posts in order to begin to address them. We do find that some of the vacancies on the finance level tend to be on the lower level, and to a large extent we dependent, because these are advertised internally, we dependent on the flow from other departments, and there's not much incentive for people to move on these low levels. But that's an issue that the CDC Corporate Services is addressing. Chairperson, the understanding I should point out occurred largely in two areas. Firstly, on the area of personnel, and secondly, in the area of infrastructure. Infrastructure being, as it is, a multi-year initiative, one can understand where there are problems with regard to spending there. But on personnel, you would argue that it's unforgivable. If we do not put into perspective the history of this problem, we may not understand why underspending is so severe on personnel. Chairperson, I submit there are two issues. If you look at the figures as reported, you will see we've made considerable gains, net gains, in terms of the numbers of people who entered our establishment. In fact, in excess, as I speak, in excess of 42,000 compared to less than 40,000 in the previous financial year. There's been a considerable net gain. So the question that's being asked is, why is it that we're underspending? I think the first part of that answer is
I think you said been quite another to this. I thought you said you underspend on personnel and infrastructure.
That's it.
Yeah. So let's continue.
No, I needed to explain with respect, Chair, that on personnel, just the explanation with your concurrence.
Yeah.
It's been because of the fact that we have had major injections on the personnel budget from 20 in preparation for 7-day establishment, and the rollout not being at the same pace on the one hand, and also the savings that we've made from phasing out overtime that suddenly became available for personnel. And so we're chasing those figures.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, Chair, let's go to page 25 of the AG's report, and I'm dealing generally with the financial situation. My colleague will deal with more specific. On page 25, and also the auditors when they were talking to us, sort of indicated that the department is going in the right direction. You had 5 qualifications, you now got 4 qualifications. And last night when I was working on this report at about 9 o'clock, I asked myself, where are you improving? You know, the qualification that you had the previous year that you didn't have this year is on housing guarantees. That's it. On all the others are there. So I don't agree that we are moving in the right direction as we had emphasized. You know, because assets haven't improved. They were there last year. They were there the year before. What I'm trying to say, Commissioner, is that even though you've got less points that the Auditor General qualified you, it's not reason enough for you to sit back, I think, because, I mean, the real improvement was only on housing guarantees, and all the others, the status quo is retained. So that's just the point that I wanted to make, even to the auditors, that, yeah, we're doing better, but in terms of qualification, you would need to look at the others. And I'm reacting to the point in your report where you were saying, well, the department has received 4 qualifications compared to 5 the previous year. From our point of view, it's not how many you receive. It's the impact that even one has on us. And I'm just trying to emphasize that point, that whether it's 4 or 5 really doesn't matter to us. But let's move to page 112. That's where the bulk of my... No, let's go to page 107 first chairperson. And we'll move very briefly through these, so simple answers or straightforward answers would help us. Page 107, I beg your pardon. If we look at compensation for employees, it's gone up by 500 million rand. Am I reading it correctly? 500 million rand. Early on you were saying to us your challenge is that you couldn't employ people. You had a vacancy. You were saying to me that it's difficult to employ people. But you know, 500 million rand increase in your salary, and I did the sums last night. You only had 4,000 more people. How do we account for the 500 million rand increase in salary? Generally, I don't want the detail, but why the 500 rand increase in salary? Is that an inflation related normal increase, or what is the reason for the 500 million rand increase in salary?
Chairperson, you've asked it to be brief. Firstly, as I've stated before, we are moving towards the 7-day establishment that requires us to employ specifically 10,311 entry-level staff on the one hand. On the other hand, we also have the situation that Treasury previously allocated funds to DCS for the staff of the building of the new correctional facilities. And thirdly,
okay. Can you just be specific to the 500,000? What gave rise to that increase? Very pointed terms.
Those are the points, the 3 points. 7-day establishment, building of new correctional facilities, and the implementation of the white paper.
I'm saying that you spoke about 10,000 entry-level people. If we look at our sums, the net increase in your personnel is 4,412 people. So I don't know where the 10,000 comes from. Now, and you're saying it's the introduction of the 7-day and the white paper and all those things. Are those the reasons why we've got a 500 million rand increase? Is that what you are saying to us? Because even your work, your assets, your overtime is also 500 million. You know, if I take your overtime and your increase in your salary, we're talking about a billion rand upwards from last year. Are you saying that's because of the implementation of the white paper and the three issues that you've raised? I find it very difficult to have a billion rand increase that we've only increased warm bodies by 400, by 4,000. If we could just get clarity on that.
Yes, Chair. Indeed, if you look at the net result of the warm bodies, then clearly it would reflect that lower figure. So it may skew our actual take-up. But on the other hand, I think it's also a difficulty that Treasury recognized. Chairperson, you're right. The fact that you're linking the additional funding to also the fact that of overtime. In fact, I need to tell you that if we did not phase out overtime payment for Saturday, our expenditure on overtime would have been 1.2 billion for that particular year. So what we're saying is that because of all the savings that we have, and in addition the additional money that we received from National Treasury, we had too much money, and Treasury should have intervened long ago to reduce our baseline, because the ability of any department to spend that kind of money is just not there.
I'm happy to say
Treasury has since done so.
No. Let's keep it right there. The increase in the amount of compensation to employees of 500 million is because you have had to employ additional staff. Is it 10,000 or is it 4,000? What do you have?
Chairperson, in terms of our plans and our actual take-up rate for entry-level staff, we have achieved our target of 10,300. I'm saying with the outflow of people, resignations and attrition, it has an impact on the final total. That's why I'm saying that's the reason for that discrepancy.
Okay, all right.
Thanks, Chair. I'm glad Mr. Bloom is here. Mr. Bloom, you know, when you employ 10,000 people and you get rid of 6,000 people, I'm hoping you're getting rid of Deadwood, because that's the net effect. If you employ 10,000, and I'm saying your net increase for the year is only 4,000, it means somewhere as you were getting the 10, 6 were leaving on the other side. That can be the only explanation why you've only got a 4,000. So I'm hoping that the department is, or certainly the portfolio committee is monitoring the quality of people that we are employing. Because we can't be bringing them in on one door and getting rid of them on the other door. But on page, let's move to page 112, Chairperson. And, Commissioner, you said you get too much money.
Excuse me, Chair, the page number again?
112. You indicated just now that Treasury probably gave you too much money. I'm looking at Treasury, and I'll come back to Treasury at some point for giving people too much money. Your consultants, you see, this is the other thing. We employ many people. Mr. Bloom, I'm hoping you're listening. We employ many people. We pay R1 billion additional salary. I mean, we pass those issues. But then we go to consultants and contractors. And they go up from 154 million to 206 million. 53 million rand increase in consultants and contractors. 34% increase. We're employing more people. We are doing all these things that we are saying we're supposed to be doing. At the same time, we have consultants and contractors for 53 million rand increase for the year. 206 million rand for consultants and contractors. Can you explain to us what was the bulk of their work? We don't want the detail, but what kind of contractual sort of consultancy work did the department engage in for 53 million rand?
Chairperson, in broad strokes, yes, my colleagues, I'm sure, will amplify. We're using consultants largely in the IT environment, and the infrastructural development environment, work that's been undertaken with feasibility studies for the building of correctional facilities, highly technical work that we had to outsource. But let me ask CDC Corporate Services just to amplify.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Indeed, the Commissioner is right. It's in areas where you cannot normally compare the numbers of people that you are employing vis-a-vis the work that the consultants do, because the majority of the people with entry-level, junior and middle management appointments, and these the areas of that where we use consultants are mostly technical and high-level. I think that's the issue. And also in this particular year, there was an increase in terms of training of junior and middle managers, which was done by external providers rather than using our own internal people.
All right. Thanks. Let me just on that one. I'm hoping that these are government departments, because all the issues you've raised, IT, we've got a CETA specifically for IT. Technical on buildings, we've got Public Works, who we engaged with last week. Management, we've got SAMD. So if you're saying the 53 million rand went from your department to SAMD, to Public Works, and to CETA, I'm comfortable. But if this thing went to any other private or outside business, then it's in a problem. Then we have a problem. Because either we deal with outsiders and close internal departments that focus on these things, or we deal with internal departments and stop or reduce our reliance on consultants. So on all these things, I'm just hoping that it's interdepartmental. Yeah.
All right. You want to respond to that question of whether it's interdepartmental or it's private related?
Okay. Let me first go take it, go at it, Chairperson. Thank you. Yes, some of the training and some of the engagements are through CETA and so on. But within CISA, within those structures as well, they do engage people from outside. So there would be instances where we go through them. There would be instances where we go out on public tenders because of capacity issues within those structures as well.
All right. Okay. No, that's fine.
Thank you very much. We will deal with them when we get to them. But 53 million rand is excessive. I mean, 206 million rand is the net. 53 is just the increase. Operating leases, I just want to make the point that operating leases have gone up by 105%. Now, if it has to do with the APOPs and that type of thing, my colleagues will deal with that. Why did operating leases go up by 105%? If it's got to do with APOPs, just say so, because I don't want to engage with it. Colleagues of mine will deal with it later. But is there any reason why the operating leases have gone up by so much?
I'm sure it's the functions that's been devolved to us, but let me ask the DC to respond.
Thanks, Commissioner. On the operating leases, it is the devolved funds that were previously sitting under the Department of Public Works for the leasing of office buildings. Funds are subsequently devolved to departments, so that's why you're seeing that that issue, because it's not APOC. If I can come back on the consultants and special services, because it takes those three broad categories, the huge increase, what happened in terms of the catering contract that we have for the outsourcing of kitchens. Previously, we had that under inventories. Whilst we're engaging with the SCOA people at National Treasury for them to create an item on bar so we could process those payments. But subsequently, it was agreed that we should pay that under special services. So that's why for 6-7 years, we've got that huge increase in those. It's not per se special consultants, but it is, if you look at inventories, then that's where you don't see that kind of a magnitude. But we had to do the shifting in terms of the item for payment.
Okay.
All right. The last item on that page, facilities and venues. We spent 10 million rand. Is that for functions and conferences and what? What is the 10 million rand for facilities and venues that correctional services require? Last year it was 5 million rand. This year it's 10 million rand. Is it 10 million? Yeah, 10 million rand. Can you explain to us what they're using 10 million rand to expend on facilities and venues?
Yes, thank you, Chief. I think most of that spending relates to our acceleration in the first instance of junior and middle management training, where we've started with that process, and secondly, also the training to roll out the white paper. But the Chief Deputy Commissioner of Corporate Services has also been responsible for human resource development. Can you just add to that?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, indeed. I think about half of that amount went to venues for training. About 12 million of that amount went to venues for training, whereas the others would be workshops and meetings that would take place outside, where we need bigger venues than those and suitable venues than those that we have internally in the department.
Thank you very much. Page 114 is my next page. And I want to deal with 7.1 and 7.2. We have material losses in the department of 3 million rand. Almost a million rand of that is for state vehicles. 940,000 rand is loss of state vehicles. Before you even answer me, the last time we met with this department, one of my colleagues raised this matter and said that the year before we had 178,000 rand on vehicles. That then was doubled up to 863. When they were talking to you last time, that 863 was the current. So 0405 was 178,000. 0506 is 863,000. 0607 is 940,000 rand on state vehicle losses
One, what is causing you guys to lose so many state vehicles? And two, are you firing people that are misusing our assets to that effect?
Yes, indeed, Chairperson, it is a problem, our fleet management system. But we've also seen that where people are transgressed, we have tried to fast-track both the issue of disciplinary charges as well as trying to claim the money from them. And we have also said we need to find ways of making it possible for us to do so quicker.
Are you succeeding in that? No, hang on. You have used try on two occasions. Now you see, that does not say to us whether this is what is happening or...
No, I was saying that part of the problem is, and this is why I'm saying that the difficulty, that the state attorney seems to be too eager to write off certain amounts. And we've been saying that we need to pursue a different strategy. But Ms. Mareka, maybe you want to come in on there as well?
Thank you, Chairperson. We do have a challenge around the issue of state vehicles, because if you look at the regulations, it's indicating that if an official was actually on official business or not drunk, therefore the official has not lost state cover. So around that issue, legal opinion from state attorney would always be the official has not lost state cover because the official was not drunk, therefore write off. So it's an issue that we have engaged with the legal people to say, but there should be some recourse from the side of the state. But all opinions become saying that clause alone would leave them, the department, to actually having to write off these damages to state vehicles. The engagement is still continuing, because what actually has been advised is that probably we need, therefore, to look back to the federal regulations and have a clause that would be able then to cover the employer.
I just wanted to talk on that matter, Chair, then maybe you can summarize it. I think, Chairperson, that at some point we need to call the state attorney, whether it's the department. You know, too often this committee is told that it's because of the state attorney. When we fight about prescription, department say to us, the state attorney. We're now talking about R1 million losses of vehicles, we told the state attorney. This individual is supposed to be working for us as the state. But it looks more like this individual is working to protect people that are doing what they're not supposed to be doing. So at some point, Chair, I think Scopa needs to call the state attorney and understand what does the state attorney define as his or her role. Because clearly, it's not in the interest of state resources. And maybe Treasury must also come and help us on this one. Because we can't continuously hear that the state is shooting itself in the foot. We can't continuously hear that story. That it's our attorney that says write off R1 million on vehicles. Chair, I don't know if you want to add on that, but my firm proposal is that the state attorney's office must come before the office.
Actually, I also wanted to follow that. Is it just that simple? That as long as the official was not drunk, was on official duty, then he or she has not lost the state cover, and that's it. Treasurer, is there anything you can say on this matter?
Chairperson, I would hesitate to come in at this stage. Thank you.
Right, but in relation to disciplinary action, because I think that's the point that they were at, has any disciplinary action, is disciplinary action being taken, and or what is happening? Because from what has been given, from 178 to 863 to 940, it does not appear that they were actually bringing the incidents down. If anything, they seem to be shooting up. Are there measures that have been taken, especially in terms of disciplinary measures in relation to these losses? Or is it that because they have state cover, then there are no internal processes that can be taken?
Chairperson, Chairperson, the breakdown we can give, but we, in cases of negligence, there are consequences. We do take disciplinary action.
In case of negligence. So negligence would imply being drunk or being not on official business.
Well, it then really depends on the findings of the investigation report into such incidents. But clearly, being drunk, if they are drunk, then we will be able to both disciplinary and civilly get this money back and pursue disciplinary action. So yes, indeed.
Yeah, the point I'm driving at is that, so it means if an official was not drunk, was on official duty, do you still carry an investigation? Or if your investigation reaches a point that he was not drunk, he was on official duty, then it stops? Or what happens?
No, of course it must be an investigation report, and it must have exhausted the reasons why that particular incident has occurred. I don't think you want to...
Alright. No. If that's the position of the exhaustive, it must check one of the things.
Just on, sorry, keep up. On that same page, can you just explain to us, I tried to look for it in the annual report, again under material losses, there are claims for 1.6 or 1 billion rand. 1.6 billion. What are those claims against your department for 1.6 billion rand? I'm talking on page 114 under material losses. Can somebody just try and enlighten us on the claims?
Thank you, Norbert. The 1.6 million is actual expenditure indicates around the legal claim against the department, the litigation against the department for the annual review.
We're asking what type of claims? Is it illegal detention? What type of claims against the department? We know it's claims, but if you can give us an indication, because that will also indicate to us where you guys need to fix up. A claim or what? Insurance claim? A claim that somebody's making because you detained them illegally? A claim that you are beating them up? What type of claims are these?
Chairperson, we can provide a breakdown of that 1.6, but it is various categories of these claims that would be against the department.
Thanks. If they could provide it with us, and if Mr. Bloom and his team could also follow that up, because if these claims are because of negligence from individuals, like motor vehicles, I don't think the state should be looking after that. Those that are guilty must be the ones that are paying for that. But if you could supply us with the breakdown of what makes up 1.5 billion rand worth of claims against the department. My final point, Chairperson, on page 120. We have irregular expenditure. And you had an opening balance of 621,000. And then your irregular expenditure for the current year was 137,000 rand, eh? Yeah. And when I looked at it, it says it's because services of advertising the department on the internet as part of profiling of DCS leadership. As a layman, it sounds almost like you guys, and I'm assuming the internet is intergovernment as opposed to the internet, which is external. So reading this thing last night, it says that there was an expense of 137,000 for profiling the leadership of this department. Are you guys saying to us that you then took out a profile that says, I'm the commissioner for the BCom, I've done this and I've done that, and circulated it within government, or what is this thing? What is this thing that says profiling the leadership, and it's an intranet? I'm trying to link those two. Intranet, as I understand it, would be inter-organizational, which can only mean it's inter-government. And then profiling leadership means advertising. Are you guys sending out profiles of
this leadership within government and costing us 137 million rand to do that. 137,000 rand, I beg your pardon. Can somebody explain what is going on here?
It seems we don't have the full information, but I think there may be some way in which that statement may be a bit misleading, Chairperson. And what makes me say the question, that makes me say that is the remark that there's an investigation in progress, because the investigation that I know of that's in progress and that's just been concluded recently was in training provided for communication of senior management in the department.
Now, please provide us with that, because as it stands here, it's a serious problem if you guys go and advertise yourself within government.
Can I
and cost us that amount of money? No, I don't. You said you're saying the statement is misleading.
I'm saying it's a bit misleading from the information available to me, so I can give it. Can clarify that.
But I mean, Commissioner, this is your annual report. My assumption is that before it went to print, everything that is here, you can own up to it. There could not have been anybody from outside the department who would have inserted that statement. It certainly is your product, and I would find it unacceptable that you actually would find it difficult to associate with a statement as it stands. It's one thing to give details or something. It's quite another to be able to own up to a statement as it stands. Let me try and check with the lady. Maybe she will remember what it's all about.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think it is in net at the time the irregular expenditure in cash, which was at the time of the end was being investigated. In terms of
it's internet
and not intranet, but it was indeed an irregular expenditure. So at the end of the financial year, it was
To do exactly as stated in the statement, to profile the leadership of the department.
Yes, Honourable Chair, in terms of the information that was provided at that stage before the investigation, it was to profile the leadership.
Yeah, no, Chair, you know this one, you guys need to follow it up as soon as possible. Because for somebody to have paid 137,000 rand, they would have paid it to somebody, a senior manager would have had to authorize it, somebody would have had to sign the check. It's not like just going to buy a slice of bread over the counter with money change that you receive from petrol vouchers or whatever. To have paid this money means there's a serious, and Nombula is correct when she was saying there are control weaknesses in this area. Because to pay 137 for something on the internet to profile government officials, we have a problem. And we would need to know who authorized this, what was the chain of command, and what action steps were taken. Again, Mr. Bloom, if you guys see, we see these guys 18 months down the line. We can't ask this question 18 months down the line. Your portfolio committee must ask this question next month when you see them. Nenzano about this thing and fixing it up. So I'm hoping you do that. The last one I want to look at here, again, it just follows up on what the chairperson said, this is your product. On page 137, and this is just a comment, on page 137, unless I'm dumb, Chairperson, you know, I try to do this thing, table 513. Table 513 starts on page 136 and it finishes on page 137. You know, those figures don't mean anything to me. This is your product. You've probably spent I don't know how many thousand rand doing this report. If you just add up those totals, I would have assumed that if you do the cross calculation, you know, if you add up those across 3.451044 and 3.9, it should give you something like that total at the end of the day. That's how my brain works. it doesn't do that. So I don't know how you cross, if that is what it meant. But secondly, if you go to the overtime, because when I was doing the overtime late last night that I picked this thing up, your overtime is 510, and it says overtime is 44.5% of your total cost. The reality is only 9% of your total cost. But this book says it's 44% of it. You see, Chef, what I'm saying is, you can't bring this book to Parliament with such basic errors in it and expect not to be wrapped around the knuckles about it. You can't do that. One, it costs you a lot of money. Two, it's very misleading. If I didn't do my sums, my initial reaction is that you're paying 44 or 45% of your total cost is overtime. You're creating problems for yourself. And for a long time, these reports are very glossy, but they are meaningless if your figures are so incorrect. Can somebody, and again, this is your document, it's not our document. How do we get to a situation where it's so very wrong? And you publish it and you give it to Parliament.
Chairperson, I'm really trying to follow the...
Let me give it to you slowly then. On page 137, you've got something called total at the end of page 137. All right? You've got the salary total of 3,477. You've then got overtime total of 510. And then you've got homeowner's allowance of 44. Medical of 343. And then you've got a grand total of 55. Are we together? I'm saying if you add those things, it doesn't come to 5-5. That's the first problem that I have. The second problem that I have, you see, you have an amount and salary as a percentage of personal cost, which is 63. Then you have an amount for overtime of 510, and you have overtime as a percentage, and you've got 44719. Do you see what I'm saying? And it says overtime as a percentage. I'm saying what you should have had there was 9%. You've got you've got exactly the same amount that you've got for homeowners allowances. On that same column. Are you with me? I am saying that it's just total, I don't know how this thing gets quality checked, Shepard.
Actually, to us, too, if you look at the medical assistance, it's 343 million. But as a percentage, it is 6.2. But as you correctly point out, on overtime, 510 is 44%. So both of them can certainly not be correct. And yes.
So I think the point that we are making is that don't bring a document to SCOPA that is as inaccurate as this report is. Don't ever do that again, guys. Because at least some of us read reports overnight. We read these things, and we're going to hold you accountable for something. If somebody told me how much it cost for your annual report, we will claim it from you. That's what we are saying to you. We will claim it from you guys. Because you can't produce this rubbish and then expect us to, on the basis of this, hold the executive accountable. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I accept that there are no excuses for that.
All right. Thanks, Comrade. Honorable Trent.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm going to deal with asset management because that is the subject of your qualification, and it is two consecutive years you've had a qualification in regards to asset management. I just want to say that assets, you are custodians of state assets. It's not just the money you get, it's the assets, and they are public assets, and you are expected to look after those assets. My colleague was just saying, Smith, about vehicles that disappear, etc. Well, that's because we're not looking after our assets, and they are worth many billions of rands. So that is the purpose of your qualification, and would you agree with me that your performance in terms of the way you're looking after the taxpayers' assets has not been very good? Would you agree with me? It leaves a lot to be desired.
I agree with you.
Thank you. Now, in terms of the asset management, we're going to deal with it in under three categories, as in the Auditor General's report, so that I can just go, you can make sure. We're going to deal with just the three particular issues, and that is capital assets, buildings and other structures, and then intangible assets. And there are a whole lot of issues revolving around these three basic headings. And I'm going to start with perhaps the more technical one, and that is building and other fixed structures. The first question is, in terms of treasury regulations, you are required to capitalize all additions to buildings and fixed structures, and then transfer those amounts to the Department of Public Works. The reason is that as we move towards pool accounting, this becomes necessary. And if you don't do that, or other departments and yourselves don't do it, you're going to hold up this process. Now, can you explain to us why this is not being done? Because in your annual report, and on page 122 and 123, the amount of $1.2 billion is actually there, but it's not transferred to public works. Why have you not done that?
Yes, Shepherdson, indeed, it's not been done because we've really been struggling with, firstly, the way in which we should do so. And I think there's some clarification that we're getting from Treasury. We have decided that in future what we will simply do is to write to the Department of Public Works annually to inform them of these additions and to say that we are not reflecting it in our financials, and it should indeed be reflected in the Department of Public Works financials. But perhaps just on the more technical side, the DC Financial and Management Accounting may want to add, or the Chief Financial Officer.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Chair. Indeed, we have been capitalizing on additions and improvements in terms of looking for at our statement of financial performance. But the issue, there is currently no guideline in terms of how that should be happening. We have engaged National Treasury in this regard. They have preliminary engaged the Department of Public Works, but it is still an issue that even as we're sitting here, it is not yet resolved in terms of how to help us. And we're still waiting. We had a meeting also with them the Monday last week in this regard to say that we do need a lasting solution in terms of how we as departments should be dealing with this issue, in terms of how then do you account for them. In our books, it's an issue because this is public works property, and if so, how do you disclose that in the financials, and how should public works disclose that in their own financials? So it is a matter that currently the sitting here is not yet resolved by means of the guideline or a practice note from National Treasury.
I think maybe you should just get a comment from National Treasury, because there appears to be some confusion in this matter, and if that's the case, then well, then we do understand that.
Okay.
Chairperson, thank you. The normal procedure is that the department will engage with the National Treasury, state the problem, and then the National Treasury will take that problem to the committee that actually deals with it. And in that committee, it will be sorted out, and the practice note will be prepared and sent out to the department. So, yes, it's quite right that an immediate answer can't normally be given. It takes a week or three to do that.
Well, if it only takes a week or three, we trust that this matter will then be resolved before the end of the financial year, the current one. Okay?
To the next question, I just want to point out that the Auditor General has told us that business processes is what drives businesses, and you're a business, okay? Then he goes on to say, and this has been mentioned, but I think we should repeat it, assets are not counted annually, and exceptions are not followed up timelessly. Documentation relating to assets, not readily available for examination. That's what the auditors write. And then they say the control activities surrounding the control of assets are in place, but are not applied appropriately. Well, that's all do with business processes. Would you agree with me? And just to add, you know, the Auditor General told us yesterday that because of these documents that are not available, there are long delays. Sometimes takes them weeks and weeks to get these documents, and this remains a major problem. And that's obviously going to add cost to your audit. Now, having said that, Let's just go back to the movement of tangible capital assets. On page 123, you still have 597 million rand worth of what you would call work in progress. Okay? That's quite a substantial amount of money. The Auditor General actually has told us that you were not able to provide him with adequate documentation and proof of the value of those, of that work in progress. Now, has that problem been resolved now? Or to what extent was the Auditor General unable to get proof? Is it half of that amount, or a small amount, or is it a major amount? In terms of giving him the correct information and documentation to verify that amount of 597.
Jefferson, yes, thanks. There are different dimensions to what you have asked. Indeed, it's not up to standard. Part of the problem, as we will come to, is assistance related. Another part of it relates to the nature of the assets in these days. And there are some strategies that we are following in order to improve that. On the matter, the last issue, briefly, to say that was work in progress arising from the building of the Kimberley project, but the detail I'll ask the Deputy Commissioner to provide.
Yeah, no, it's fine. As long as the principle is established, let's keep it at that.
Yes, Chair, the only problem I have is that the Auditor General told us yesterday that they had still not, at that point of time, been able to verify that that amount has been correct. And I'm just asking whether that has now been done, whether the Auditor General has. Because he issued a management letter regarding this matter, and I know you have an ongoing relationship with the AG, and we want to know if that matter has been resolved. It's half a billion rand, so it's not just pocket money.
All right, let's hear that. Has that been resolved?
Thank you, Chairperson. Because this is building projects, documentation resides with the Department of Public Works. What is provided to us as departments is paste documents. It just tells you the process. We have requested access to the WCS system in public works in terms of project management, but still, the certificate where it would be certified that this building is 20% complete or is work in progress will not be in DCA. It will still be in public works. So it's that arrangement of public works being the implementing agent and us holding the money in terms of the vote and actually spending. But basically what comes to the department is just case documents. But all certificates are there in terms of what project is complete, what project is not complete, what certification exists in terms of the built industry, specially certifying that.
All right.
So what you're saying is that for that amount, all the certificates were available as at the end of the financial year. But then the Auditor General couldn't verify. I don't understand.
What Jefferson is saying is that if you look at the arrangement, the department has got the budget, public works has got all the documentation. There is no documentation, either an invoice or a certificate that comes to the department.
All right, okay. No, so what you're saying actually is that the Auditor General was requesting the impossible from you in terms of documentation, because clearly there was no documentation that you could provide. Or maybe let's hear from the AG.
Honourable Chair, to date I'm aware that approximately 30 million has been received by our office in terms of the PACE documentation. I think we need to accept the fact that these are the financial statements of the department. These are their figures. They need to be able to verify and substantiate the figures that appear in the financial statements. And so to date, we have not been able to verify if this is the correct amount in progress. We read 50 million of PACE documentation that we have received. The rest of us got it.
But is the problem on the basis of what she has explained, or exactly what is the problem in terms of understanding?
Chair, the issue is very much between the department and the Department of Public Works and the certification of progress made. I think it must be a standard requirement that the department, because that is the figure that they're showing in their books, they must get it from somewhere, that there's adequate documentary evidence in support of that figure from the Department of Public Works. That should apply right across the board to all departments.
I understood that you started saying the Auditor General says that you've incurred expenditure but you can't find receipts, and then you tell us that the people you bought the equipment from didn't give you a receipt.
I think it's the department's job to, it's your money, you're paying them, you're giving them that money to build something for you, for your use. But, Chair, I don't think that we can just say it's somebody else's fault. I think in terms of in the future, please, I think, you know, the buck must stop with you. And if you're having problems with Public Works, well, then talk to the Treasury.
I think that's where we have to go. Chair, my third question then flows from these, and I think the Commissioner was about to tell us, and so I will just deal with it. The Auditor General explained to us that there are three different computer programs that are used for the management of your inventories and stock and so on. It's first of all the procurement one, which is TAC, and then your web asset tool, which only calculates depreciation, things like that, and we'll come to depreciation. And then DAS, which is your accounting system of payment. He says there that there's no reconciliation, or there was no proper reconciliation performed between the three systems. Now, that is problematic, and I'll come to a specific problem about that when you've answered the basics of why is this reconciliation not possible. The Auditor General also tells us that you are in the process, apparently, of introducing a logos system, that might have a limit as large that. Now, I'm not a computer expert, but maybe you could just explain to the committee how we're going to solve this problem, because with that enormous amount of assets that you control, plus the provisioning that you require, clearly you need systems that work properly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Yes, indeed, we do have the three systems, and we can confirm that we are migrating to Logos. We, at this stage, we've been the only department that we're still stuck with some of these older systems, and it took us a while to get that approval. Now that we have it, we've started the process, and I think we want to make sure that we do not come back here year after year and report the same thing, because this is a kind of a very human-intensive process. Firstly, to say we've attempted to reconcile between the three systems, because that's what we told Scopa the last time that we will do, only to be frustrated by the different basis upon which information is recorded on the systems as we started off with that process. So that didn't give us much joy. And the only lasting solution is for us to migrate to Logos. Now, we're also saying that given the intensity of the work, we want to make sure that we focus on the areas where we can achieve the maximum results. And part of our discussion is, of course, to begin to focus on the current assets that we need to account for. Many of our assets within DCS, Chairperson, are older than 10 years, some 15 years, and we've agreed that some of that should actually reflect the zero value. So to keep busy with some of these processes and then forget to do the current and stay up to date are some of the choices that we are making. I do have the Deputy Commissioner responsible for supply chain management and the management of this overall process, Mr. Ngubo, here with us. You may want to just give some of the more detailed interjections.
No, it's fine. I think your answer suffices.
Yes, just one follow-up question, Chair, is, and Vincent was talking about vacancies and capacity and so on. You know, we were also told that although you have 10% vacancies across the board, which is not that bad compared to other departments, your problems lie in critical posts. Now, do you have the capacity to actually do what you've just told us you're going to try and do? Put it right. I mean, it's not like saying, well, you know, you've got a choice between going back and getting the asset register up to date or dealing with current issues. To me, there's no choice. You've got to do both. Otherwise, your asset register is never going to be in order. Do you have the capacity, and can you tell this committee whether you will be able to put this right within a reasonable time? Because we're talking about qualifications. We don't need to have qualifications every year. We'd love to see a clean audit report.
I can assure you I would love that a lot more, Mr. Chen. We are doing a number of things. I think this case, we've spoken about it, the problems of people in finance and supply chain management that tend to be shifted around. We addressing that through the whole introduction of the course, the code of remuneration, and this separation of custodial staff from the administrative staff, and so get people to focus on the one end. Part of the question, as far as it relates to IT technology, my understanding is as we move to LOGOS, the support for that largely is also within CETA, and so part of our problems there should be overcome. But of course the bigger frustration is the scoping of the work and how long it will take to get this process up and running, so that I don't make any false undertakings. I have said, Chairperson, that we need to deal with this as a matter of urgency. We need to communicate to staff. In fact, the period of December and January have already instructed that we use that period to really fast track this process and get up to speed. I can assure this committee that I will do everything in my power to get the process fast tracked and for us to take this challenge very seriously.
I'm just going to add two further questions, which are really rhetorical questions, because I think they have sort of broadly been answered. But the Auditor General, I said there, at year end, a large number of assets purchased and captured on VAS were not captured on your watch system. So that's obviously because of the lack of capacity or the fact that they don't integrate with each other. But, you know, that's a problem. And then an even more basic problem, which we can't understand why this still happens, is that not all your assets were barcoded and recorded in a fixed asset. You know, it's like when we get the Department of Justice telling us in the monies in trust, you know, that can't account for it because they don't have a cash book. You know, I mean, it's just a basic thing. Surely you record your assets. And I'm going to end off with just a few questions around the document I've got here in front of me, which is a simple document. Why is it that we can't just do those simple things? Surely there's a process. You see, I got the Auditor General to give me a document here, which just simply says controls over acquisition and the safeguarding of assets. And he just goes through and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 simple steps. I'll read them out to you when we finish if we've got a minute or two. Simple steps. And that's one of them. You know, why can't that just be done?
Why it can't be done, I think we've also run out of excuses. I'm not going to offer any, except to say that we are insisting that there must be managerial accountability and responsibility as part of our performance management system. We can't continue to apologize for managers who are not doing their work. They may not have understand the intensity of the work required and the need for staff to be focused on this, and that message we're sending through quite clearly.
Yes, Chair, the reason that I asked this question is because, you know, somebody would say, well, why is it so important to have a barcode on a chair?
That's one chair, but when you start adding up everything, and you open up for fraud and theft, and, you know, and that's what I was saying. These are the sources that are paid for by the taxpayers, and they are in your custody. Just like the offenders are in your custody, all your assets are also in your custody, and you should be good at looking after these sort of things. I mean, that's your job, to look after people in custody or things in custody. Chair, I'd just like, if I've got a few minutes, I'd just like to ask you, can you sort of give us the assurance, first of all, that when you acquire goods and assets from, that first of all you have a need identification. You identify the need. You do that? You do. Well, that's good. Then you check the availability of the funds in the budget. You do that.
Yes.
That's good. Then you have an acquisition for purchase. It's prepared and authorized. That gets done. So up to there we're still okay. We then prepare the order form.
Where are your questions?
Jim, we're getting to a point that the fish, they're doing well.
Are you sure they're doing well?
Then when the goods are received, is the receipt of those goods recorded and checked? It is. Okay, and the invoice, you get the invoice before you pay. Alright, so now we've got everything's happening according to plan. Then the goods are captured in the register, is that right?
Okay, so that's where the problem starts. Captured in the register. And then we start with the movement control and the stock take. Why don't you take stock regularly? And then, finally, when you dispose of the goods, you must follow the correct process. Now, we come to the process, Jim. The only thing is, before I do that, how come then that the Auditor General said you can't provide him with these documents if you say you're doing all those things?
Citing my general comments, perhaps reflect on some specific incidences where people are not responsive, and given the decentralized nature of PTS and ways of trying to improve on that by having a focal point to follow through and follow up.
And then finally, the Auditor General, I won't read them out to you. So I'm just fascinating. To me, this is simple stuff. Then there's the segregation of the duty. For example, the requisitioning of the goods, the authorizing of the purchase, and the receiving of the goods. You know, that must be segregated. Do you segregate all these functions?
In as far as possible, but with a staff shortage.
So you can't. So there are problems. So that can also lead to malpractice. I think, Chair, what I can't understand is that, you know, these are really simple things, and I think we would really like to see these things happening, and you have explained to us that it is a problem with capacity, and we would like you to put that right. Chair, so, which then leads me just to the final point, and this is an issue raised by the Auditor General, which I want to check, because it's all got to do with your qualification. In respect of the disposal of tangible assets, capital assets. You are supposed to bring them into your register at cost. Okay? Cost price. Yet, on page 124, you had transport assets which you brought in at what I call fair value. And then, because they've been brought in at a higher value, and then they were the depreciation on the fair value was recorded. And that apparently is not in terms of the treasury regulations. I know it's a very technical thing. But why did you do that? Because I'm told that fair value means when you inherit something or you get it, you don't buy it, you've got to put some sort of value on it. And if you don't have a value, well, then you put what, 1 rand or something. But you're supposed to bring them in at cost. And it's demonstrated in the last column where you brought in other machinery equipment at 207,000 and then you sold them at 417,000, so, you know, we get the picture there.
No, I think it's the issue of backlog and time, but let me ask the experts to clarify.
Thank you, Chair. The first problem that we are experienced in capturing assets, especially the very old one, was to actually get the source documents in capturing. So, a fair value was given in those. And then, according to the qualification, it says that assets should have been disposed at a cost. Now the system, the what, once an asset has been registered on it, it will start depreciating the asset. So at the time when it is disposed, we actually went and got the report which actually indicated at the time that how much would have this asset actually cost at the time. But when you look at some of the items, and if I can make an example, computers that had been there for a long time, to say a computer after 4 years, when you know that the life of a computer is 3 years, you can still charge the person that lost that computer for 4,000. That's what it says. But we said that we need to look at that guideline as well, although some of the documents are not there.
All right.
Just tell you, what is the general condition? Can you give us a final comment on that?
And we're done with you.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
So I have one or two questions which at the end, if there is time, on other issues.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In terms of the system and the disposals, we have taken it up with the department, and we realize that the WAT system is calculating the depreciation. But surely what we have discussed is that they should have had the values before the depreciation, and I think that's a major problem. But we have discussed it with the department, and we'll be following up on the issue of the depreciation as such. As with regards to the amounts that relate to disposal at fair value, it was a National Treasury requirement in the guidelines that said that every asset had to put a value. If they could not get any values for the assets that couldn't go far back, then they should have fair value those assets. And therefore, a lot of assets were fair value, because this is the first time that we started auditing the opening balances of the assets, and that's why the department had to go through a process of fair valuing those assets.
Okay.
I want the question whether it's a technical matter, and we should be able to get it right. You know, we don't want qualifications of a technical thing.
Thank you, Chair. Remembering that I'm brand new to the department and not part of the previous excuse I was saying, and in the manner that also General raises issues is that you need to look at the root cause and in finding solutions in striving towards a cleaner audit report. I agree with Mr. Trent that the assets should be easier to resolve in that. Amongst the undertakings we have taken, what really are technical issues, bearing in mind that the assets DCS are widely spread and they're not necessarily of high value. The many interventions that you could have used in a different environment, except for example, valuation, etc., would not apply in this case. There are many times beds, agricultural implements, kitchen utensils, etc. In our discussions to address the issue is the possibility that we focus on the fundamentals of verifying our assets and safeguarding it and accounting for it correctly. Where there are instances, for example, where we are uncertain as to where general regulations as far as fair value for all assets would be, we would then have to engage Treasury and come up with a decision as a department how we would deal with that going forward. Because some of these may not necessarily apply to DCS. Another factor, sir, is that a lot of the assets to DCS are also manufactured by inmates. And it's also very decentralized. So often we would be looking for documents from remote facilities. And I think people would look for them and not realize they would not be forthcoming. And those are amongst the issues in developing a holistic approach with the assets. We're really hopeful of coming with a cleaner report on this matter. Thank you.
Chair, with your indulgence, I slipped up. I've just got to close the loop. There's one more question, which is a very quick one. Unusual. I've not seen this often, and it's got to do with intangible assets. The Auditor General said he was unable to satisfy himself concerning the existence of intangible assets, as the department did not disclose any intangible assets. Then he goes on to say that audit work performed indicated that the department did own intangible assets, and there was no asset register. There was no asset register for intangible assets. Could you just please have an explanation as to why that comment was made?
Can I ask the Deputy Commissioner for IT, Chito? While they're sorting themselves, I think we've been saying that whilst we do have some information on the intangible assets, again, it's a matter of getting the practice note clarified in terms of how we should and what we should record of intangible assets and how we should disclose it. Are the details, Mr. Ngogo?
The intangible assets, those are your software programs. The challenge that we faced, first of all, we had a list of all the intangible assets, all the software that we had in the department, but they were not recorded on the web assets tool, which is our asset register. The reason being that when we have to capture those, we need to have an invoice to capture, but the invoice that has been provided was actually not indicating which portion is actually for maintenance and which portion is actually just exclusively for the unit that is now the software that is to be captured in the web asset tool. That was a challenge to us, to say we need to look at it and find out how we should catch it. Another challenge was that there is also applications that are developed in-house in the department, which we needed to actually capture. That how do we actually capture those? There was a discussion which I think my colleague would actually expand on that together with Treasury.
No, that's fine. I think the critical question is the development of the practice note. I think that's the area we're interested in, so that you have guidelines in terms of how the disclosure should be made. All right. Thank you, Honorable Trent.
Thank you, Chair.
Right, what must you use?
Thank you, Chair. My source reference is the AG's report, pages 7, 7, 8, and 7, 9. My focus area would be the IT systems. Right, I understand from previous engagement with the department that the National Treasury had prescribed upon them IT systems that were incompatible and not talking to each other. The which fact admittedly must have been frustrating to the department. However, the department also indicated in the red that they had developed and started training on procedures to reconcile the three systems manually. Now, the question that I ask is that we are today addressing this same issue which had started being addressed in April 2006. What have been your challenges, and how are you addressing them? And when can we expect this issue to be put to rest finally? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We started with the process of getting the systems to reconcile, but we had a lot of challenges in terms of, first of all, the description in the two systems, the web asset tool and the PAS, the descriptions are different. And also the way they capture. For example, in the web asset tool, when you add a new, let's say a new share, it will just add it and divide the price of the whole other shares that were there, which would not reflect the true picture of how much that share actually cost. On the other side, the web asset tool, especially if you have got to some losses that you need to actually effect.
Yeah.
I don't think that the gentleman is addressing himself to my question. I say, what is the progress regarding the manual reconciliation that we started in April 2006? What challenges did you have? If you had any challenges, what are you doing about them? And finally, when can we expect a turnaround in terms of that process? Let's not go back to the history of the systems that were not talking to each other. You said you had devised means to circumvent and alleviate that somehow or other.
Mr. Madhika, just to say yes, indeed, the main challenge has been the incompatibility of the systems to enable us to draw down information to do the manual reconciliation. And therefore, we've said the resolution is largely in the migration to Logos that will solve that problem. And the need, therefore, to accelerate our migration to Logos and the measures that I've reported earlier that we will be putting in place to do so.
But by when can we expect the resolution? I think the challenge is not the incompatibility. That has been identified. Now, in migrating to Logos, what have been the challenges that you've encountered? And by when do we think this would have been resolved?
We are hoping to become live at, I think, 48 centers in February, and the preparatory work and the work of the different teams are in place. I've also said that, Chairperson, in order to achieve some or to accelerate some of these targets for us to use the months of December and January, really to get some lead time. I've also made the point that unfortunately our projections are that this is a multi-year initiative. We will do our best, but we do not foresee that we will overcome it entirely within the new financial year, unfortunately.
Oh, okay, thanks for that. That has covered the ground of what I wanted to cover. But let's come to more mundane issues. The AG has identified that incompatible responsibilities in respect of the mainframe operating system at the database administration were inadequately segregated. This therefore to me suggests that these were segregated but not adequately. Therefore, why the inadequate segregation? Why the apartheid attempt? That's my question.
That question relates to the provisioning and administration system that we are using. We essentially have a problem there in terms of getting the necessary people to come and the DBA to come and work in that environment. I think from time to time over the past few years, people come in, 8 months, they leave, you know, so that has been the situation. But one of the interventions that we are going to do is to have, because the problem is we have a programmer who also acts as a DBA, and that's really the problem that was highlighted by the AG's office. In terms of what we are going to do, I think three times now, we have had security clearance problems with almost all the people that we were having. So, but one advantage on our side now, we are migrating from that, from the past to Logis, which will then alleviate the need for us.
That's going to take you years, isn't it? I mean, the migration to Logis is not going to happen next year.
No. The major part of it is going to start happening by February. But as well, we are going to have people supervising the current DBA. I mean, in the event that we don't get somebody to start very quickly. Because the person that we have recommended now, who was going to start in a week or so, has got dual citizenship and CETA has got concerns around him working in that environment. So if we can't get him working...
Do you not have other people with dual citizenship or companies owned by people with dual citizenship working in other sensitive areas?
That's the question that we are trying to resolve essentially with CETA, and we want to also raise it, I think, with NIA to say, is this environment that worrying that we can't have this person work in this environment? So we are going to have that discussion with CETA just to clear in. But also we are, because all the activities that happen on the provisioning and administration system are written on a log file. So we could essentially go in there, have a supervisor that can then check that.
I'm raising that aspect is that you are reminding me of something that has lost my mind, and now again lies with my chairperson here of the portfolio committee. There was another anonymous letter that was emailed to me of a person complaining about persons with either dual citizenship or non-South African citizens operating in very sensitive environments. So when you raise this question about the security clearance, then again my weak memory that I have received that complaint. Now whether that is genuine or not, I do not know, but it's something that maybe with the chairperson will see how we follow it up with you so that it is cleared up. But I do hear you. All I was saying was that you see the migration to Logis is not necessarily an immediate solution, because from what the commissioner has said, it is going to be a multi-year application. So while we have that in the back of our minds, but we need interim solutions from now going forward. I think that is the key. That is the key issue. So if that can be addressed, I think it would. It will ease our concerns. Let me check with the CFO before we look at Matthias. Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Coming down to basics, we are looking at, it's a scarce skill and segregation of duties. To find one person to do it is difficult enough. To find several bodies to do it is more challenging. There's also been a security environment which increases our challenges. However, there are compensating controls, which I've discussed with my colleagues, that we could introduce, for example, supervisory controls and exception reports, taking cognizance of the fact that locals would be a longer-term project.
But I suppose you would have noted from the previous reports of the AG and maybe your own experience, if not maybe something supervision, monitoring seemed to have been one of the major weaknesses in the department. So if supervision is going to be a solution, it will require very drastic changes in terms of the attitude, in terms of the way things are being done. So, supervision, while at the theoretical, at a conceptual level, would actually ease the problem, at a practical level, it would require that there has to be a change in terms of how things are done, if that is going to assist us in addressing the problem in the meantime. So I just wanted to bring that element, that while at a conceptual level, that could assist, but the practical reality in the department is that there have been challenges around those areas. So, they may need to be noted and reflected in. So, Matthias?
Thank you, Chair. I couldn't agree more with you on your suggestion about monitoring and control. However, let me go ahead. The AG also identified as follows. One programmer had inappropriate access to the production environment because compensating controls were not in place. Now, my observation is that this suggests a breach of operating procedures as well as breach of security. Your comment, please.
Thanks, Chair. That finding is related to the first one. It's in the same environment. That's where we had one person essentially doing two jobs. And essentially the same interventions that we are doing will address both issues. So it's related, the finding, the two findings.
And I hope you appreciate the risks that are involved in that kind of situation. All right, Mama, to you. Is your mic on,
Mohamed? The third identification by the AG was the fact that the processes followed to create and remove users were inadequate to ensure the user access would remain valid at all times. Would you say this is also related to the previous issues that we just addressed? Comment, please.
Thanks, Chair. It is not related. I think this is a problem that relates to a number of things. One, which we have addressed, and I'm going to talk to the things that we have done and the things that we intend to do. One, it relates to the issue of making sure that the right people have access to the information that they need to have access to, and even maybe facilities, if we broaden it, that they need to have access to. In terms of doing that, we have from an internal, because the corporate services function and the IT function are responsible for other aspects, for different aspects of things. What we do with resignations is that if at the beginning of every month, we meet with our corporate services colleagues and say, who has resigned? And then they give us that list of people who have resigned, and then we ensure that their access to systems will terminate on the day that they leave the department. So they can have unauthorized access to systems. So that is the one that we are already doing. Secondly, and this is what we are going to be addressing now, it's the issue of people that get transferred within the department, if I move and I become responsible for supply chain management, in my role as Deputy Commissioner for IT, I have got access to many other systems which he probably will not have access to now, and similarly him. So what we have done is to then also look at that aspect of things. Who is being moved, who is being promoted within the department to perform a different role, so that we link the job profile. The job profile is the one that gives you access to specific systems and all that, and that is the aspect right. that we are going to be addressing.
All right, good. I think that those should be pretty mundane, really. And because what you're saying is this is what we're going to do, which means that's what has not been happening all along.
We have, yes, Chairperson, we haven't been doing it, and part of it is probably the complexity of the department, the number of staff that is there. So we need to put in place a process that would essentially ensure that we know when
I'm not sure if it has seriously anything to do with complexity than that those at management or supervisor level are not doing their job. I mean, you are going to correct these things while the department remains as complex as it was before. For me, it's that way it's at. If you get, like you say, transferred to another department, you have access to ABC, you move to another department, you have access to XYZ, and what you had access to in your previous position is not changed immediately. I don't think it has everything to do with monitoring and the work that is done at supervisor level. So I think let's leave it at that. You are going to do it, go and do it effectively and efficiently. That's what there is to it. Okay, Matthias.
Thank you, Chair. I don't want to leave it at that. Let's perhaps get to the bottom line. Would you agree that this issue has got nothing to do with the IT system? It has everything to do with the control and monitoring. Do you agree on that?
Yes, I agree. You just have to put some processes in place.
Thank you. Also, the AG says a service level agreement that governs the services rendered by the CETA had only been signed in October 2006 for the 06-07 financial year due to terms of reference not being finalized and agreed timely. Now, the question that begs to be answered, why this late? What were the problems? Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think one of the problems is the service level agreement. We use it obviously to measure the performance of the state IT agency, and we can be able to effect specific penalties if there is non-performance. What we in the process of, and this is a process that starts from their side because they propose an agreement, you know. And then we look at it and see if we agree with the content of it, we make changes. So in that particular year, we had very serious issues that we were not happy with. And that's what led to the late conclusion of the service level agreement. And we were not comfortable signing because of a deadline. We said, let's rather sign the agreement when we are comfortable with the terms of the agreement. And we felt that we had safeguarded the department against maybe an agreement that would have been weighed against the department, and that's why that delay happened. But in this financial year, we made sure that it was done by May, partly because we had gone through, we had started our negotiations, we had learned some of the lessons the previous year, and there wasn't very significant changes from the previous year.
So it might as well be that in this financial year under review, you started the negotiations late. That's why you learned your lessons, and this time around, the negotiations started timelessly, and there was timeless conclusion of the service level agreement.
No, the truth is that we actually started early, but we could not agree on the terms. They were just, we were coming from very divergent points. And I think as well, there was a promulgation of the new regulation in terms of the CISA Act. So part of what was then going to inform the new service level agreement was the new regulation. You know, there were a number of things that had been introduced which were new, which we needed to essentially make sure they are factored into that agreement.
Okay, all right, thank you.
So would you disagree with the observation that even though some items look like they are IT related, but they are not exactly so, but they are human related? There are issues of control, monitoring, supervision. Would you just disagree with that?
It's a bit of a tricky question. I would agree in the sense that IT does support most of the processes and most of the things that we do, I think, in this current age, and even in the department, most of the processes are essentially underpinned by information technology.
In the other part, I think the convert was actually what was looking at, that there are indeed IT problems, but the human factor is the decisive aspect here, which means the ability of those warm bodies that are in the department to actually do their work appropriately at the end of the day becomes the decisive factor in terms of whether we're making progress or not. Alright, we're in agreement.
Okay, thank you, sir. Let us come now to what the AG referred to as root causes. Perhaps which you might look at as human factor versus IT systems. It says aspects were only counted annually and exceptions were not followed up. Surely, in my view, this is a human aspect, not IT. Would you agree with that observation?
I would agree.
Further, under root causes cited was the fact that documentation in respect of assets, staff debts, medical expenditure are not underlined properly managed, maintained, and updated. Surely here we cannot blame the IT system. If so, who can then we blame? Your comment.
On the asset side, I would agree that...
on everything.
Maybe let me just deal with it broadly. It partly it's partly as a result of the IT issues and the systems issues that we have to address. And there are some initiatives, but largely also because of the lack of staff or the lack of supervision, as we've said. We agree with that.
All right, lack of staff, lack of supervision.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just wrapping up. The AG also observes that the control mechanism surrounding the control of assets, blah, 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 are in place, but...
What is that supposed to mean? Control of assets, blah, blah, blah.
Medical issues and then death and death. Assets are in place but are not applied appropriately. So my view is that normally they would be applied by warm body. Do you agree on that?
We agree.
Thank you, Chair. I won't go any further. I think I've made the point that it's got everything to do, even though we acknowledge the issue of the IT system, the Chair has got more to do with the people who are operating the IT. Thank you.
All right. I'm going to call that. Come Bono.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. And through you, Comrade Chair, I just want to deal a little bit on medical expenditure side. department could not verify the validity of payments made to Medco as they did not have a complete database of members and dependents. The following deficiencies were identified. One was that life certificates did not include dependent information, and two, contributions were made for deceased members. Could someone please let us know if that situation is properly rectified?
Yes, indeed, Chairperson, we've agreed with, and perhaps just to explain that this relates to continuation members, in other words, retired members. Under normal circumstances, their benefits are administered by the Government Employees Pension Fund. And we've not had the systems and processes in place. We've now agreed with CPF that we will use their system, and that we hope to be live in December. But CBC Corporate Services will deal with the specific things.
No. As long as you have an in-principle position in terms of how you're going to deal with it. Are we likely to see any substantive movement at the end of this financial year?
Yes, indeed.
Because this is an issue which I think has been there for I don't know when.
Although the nature of the concern has changed this year, we indeed think that this is a matter that we can resolve as a matter of speed. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Yes, Comrade.
Thank you, Chair. And seeing that contributions are made to deceased members, obviously, Comrade Chair, that there was corruption in the way. And earlier on, Comrade Vincent was talking about the financial needs that could have impact on some of the other things that you spoke about. Could you tell us how much money was involved and if any of the money was achieved? And was there corruption involved? And has that been dealt with?
Yes, Chairperson, just to say that we have checked the actual exception. It involves 8 people who have been paid, who we have paid money for to the medical aid itself. So the medical aid scheme is at fault, and we have discussed with them that they will repay us the full amount that they have paid out to these deceased members. As I said, because we did not have a database, GPF has a database and it's linked to Home Affairs, and we trust that we will be able to pick it up faster. Until then, we had to rely on the medical aid scheme to liaise with the Home Affairs in order to...
Thank you, Chair. Most of my issues that I wanted to talk about were under control, but they're all covered, so I'll end over there. Thank you.
Yeah, I do see, however, that the AG notes that the life certificate does not include dependents' information. How has this issue been, or how is this issue being dealt with? Are we likely to see it coming back in the at the end of this current financial year, or what is the situation?
Thank you very much, Chair. It's unlikely to be off the table. We are currently in that process. We've given the continuation members up to February to have submitted. We've received so far out of the 8,000, 5,000 life certificates with an indication of dependence. Others came back, but they did not still indicate their dependence, so we've referred back all of those.
When did you give them this February deadline?
Well, we had started with it in October, giving them a period of 6 months, but after 6 months we'll have a look at it. So we've given
But this has been a problem all along, and it's only in October that you finally had a way of trying to address it.
Yes, Chairperson. I think the key issue was getting the database running. I think most of our efforts were focusing on that. And there has been interaction with the members, but with the wrong addresses and so on, where to devise other strategies. Even to an extent of saying some of them were submitting, but all these correspondence not reaching us. We've got a separate mailbox so that all what they are sending comes to a specific mailbox that would be able to engage and interact with them. Because the only way we can interact with them is through written correspondence.
But these people are talking about IO employees, isn't it?
They are ex-employees.
Ex-employees.
Yeah, those who went on retirement, still being part of the scheme.
All right.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much. Comrade Corono.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to deal with accommodation and all the related issues on facilities, PPPs, and overcrowding. My first question is on your annual report, page 64 and 65. I'm going to put the question straightforward, and I hope you will be straightforward in the answers as well. When you get your target for the construction of your second group of new generation facilities or centers, your target was the completion and approval of the feasibility studies. But you say there, and your actual, only the feasibility report for the five facilities have been received. Do I read correctly? You only received it. It's not completed and not approved as yet. That's my question. And will you include in these feasibility studies that, for instance, if you budget for a fence, that you will make sure there's enough power to activate that fence? That we don't come here next year and say there was a feasibility study, but it was not properly done. So my first question, you say you've received the feasibility study. I'm asking whether it's approved and completed. That's number one. Number two, your new head office, and your actual, you stated on page 64, the feasibility study incomplete due to problems experienced with the performance of the transactional advisor. Can you inform our committee what problems have you experienced with this contractual advisor? How did it influence your financial constraints that you referred to later on? And were there any payments made to this contractor and advisor? On the same page, you have a target for completion of your planned building projects. On your target, it's only 20% of projects completed. Why only 20%? You missed your target by a long shot. On the next page, you have developed as a target,
Let's do this. Maybe let's have one pointed question, get a response and move on. Otherwise, we'll have three answered and two left out. So,
yes, Mr. Kornos, the question related to the feasibility study, to say that within that year, the financial year, we've certainly not had the total concluded. Subsequent, it's been concluded, the feasibility study, on the viability of the building of five correctional facilities. We have received the report of the transaction advisor, and the minister has made an announcement during his budget vote of his decision to proceed with the recommendations of the transaction advisor. We've also since then received Treasury Approval 1 that enables us to test them all.
Yeah, I think your mic is off.
yes, I don't. I hope you heard what I said. That yes, we have now received the transaction advisory report, and we have received permission to test the market. So we really expect quick action. There are still outstanding viability studies related to two sites that we have asked the Department of Public Works to proceed with. So yes, there is some significant progress there. Regarding the...
Can I just check?
the ones that the finance minister announced, is it the first four group or is it the second four new generation correctional centers?
Chairperson, we have, there was a plan to build 8 new correctional centers. Kimberley was, is in the process of being built, completion date 2009. Then we have the 5 that's just been completed through the work of the transaction advisor, bringing it to 6. And then we have 12.
No, let's do this. I'm getting a bit confused. I'm saying the one that the Minister of Finance announced during his budget speech, is it relating to this second group or is it the first group? As indicated on page 64. That is the top, first output, the construction of the first 4, then the second one, the construction of the second group. I just want to check which one was it referring to.
First group,
it's referring to the first group.
Yeah, but some of it had to stand over because of the viability.
Because of?
The need for the viability study, as it relates to Leucorp specifically, in that first group. Also in that first group, we have the Kimberley completed. So there is an...
Kimberley?
In the first group, we have the Kimberley Correctional Facility that's being built according to the current existing procurement, procurement processes. Then we have, I'm saying there's some overlap, and then we have outstanding from that first group, Leucorp, that we have put on hold because of the encroachment, the urban creep. We've asked that Public Works conduct a viability study on the future of Leucorp.
So which four was the minister referring to? I think that's my question. I was referring to the first group, which includes Leucorp.
A combination of the first and the second group, and it includes Port Shepston, Nigel, if you can just spell it out.
I have the names here. It's East London, Paul, Nigel, Clapsgrove, and Port Shepston.
All right.
Last week, the minister in the medium-term budget policy statement made an announcement that 5 new prisons housing 15,000 new inmates or offenders are to be procured. Are these over and above these prisons that we've just made?
So we're referring to the 5 that you mentioned.
Right. No, that's fine. I hope that Comrade Bloom, you have your pen and paper, you're taking notes to be able to follow up on these matters, because you know with the first group, you know the debacle that they degenerated into, and it will really be left to your committee in terms of continuous follow up in here. All right, yes, Comrade.
On to the other question, Chair, want to read second? Okay. There was a question, and I don't know if it was rhetorical about the fencing. We are procuring it through the PPP method, and that would be inclusive of fencing and those issues of security. The issue of the 20% completion, yes, we must admit that we are behind in terms of the infrastructure work, particularly arising from the processes around RAM in particular, and the delay, the late start of your major project. Chairperson, I am engaging my counterpart in Public Works, who we are dependent on these processes to really come up with service level agreement. In order for us to have a radical improvement in our infrastructure process. We have, I must also announce, recently appointed a dedicated deputy commissioner to focus on our infrastructure program, and we're beginning to see some real good progress in that regard.
But you see, Commissioner, I'm looking at at your output, your target, the next one. And I'm thinking, and I hope I'm not wrong, but you see, if your output is implemented ongoing building program, and your target is completion of planned building projects, for me, how should I put it? It could have been better constructed than. I mean, obviously, if you start a project, surely your target is to complete it. You could put a better target, especially in terms of time frame. That's why when you have your 20% completion, it becomes difficult to either say whether you are making progress or not, because there is no time frame. So it might as well be that it's 20% after 2 years. It's 20% in relation to a 5-year target. 20% in relation to a 2-year target. So you are able to measure yourself whether indeed you are moving at the correct speed or not.
I submit the problem that we have is poor planning. And project management, lack of project management, lack of realism of what's possible, and of course the dependence on public works, issues that I'm saying we are addressing through the appointment of key and knowledgeable staff, and I'm really expecting to see a turnaround mission.
All right. Thank you.
What we're interested in is just to refine your target and to refine your actual and put in place that you make up for the lack of missing your target by quite a margin. The same happened for the next phase, properly maintained facilities and infrastructure. Your target was developed and submitted for approval and maintenance plan. Your actual not yet developed. What are the reasons why didn't you develop the maintenance plan?
No, it's the same matter of as I said, poor planning. And putting in targets, and you would see, not only in relation to this, where people have targets, and we've discussed with the AG that the shift to monitoring of our implementation of targets that we've set should become an increased focus. It's unacceptable, and I can only undertake to make that the focus of our improvement.
Thank you, Commissioner, for being honest. At least we know, and we're honest with each other, and you know that you can. There's a weakness in the system. Can I just
maybe before you move, I thought you latch on the last item on page 35, least office accommodation provided, revision output performance measures, revision of least office accommodation needs, target implement 100% of head office accommodation needs, after not achieved due to financial constraints. And yet we had another spend of about $500 million. Am I missing something in terms of my understanding of the financial situation?
Unfortunately, it's not always easy to via funds where you project an understanding to contract the accommodation. It's an area where we've seen some reluctance on the part of Treasury to allow us to expand that. We are still in discussion with them. Again, it's just the result of poor planning and making an undertaking without making sure that the money has been approved for that purpose.
All right. Problems of poor planning.
Okay, I'm getting to overcrowding now, and I'm referring to your own report by you as accounting officer on page 67. I think you very aptly put the challenge and what you're facing. But also, if you go to the Auditor General's report, when he talks about overcrowding on page 78 of the Auditor General's report, paragraph 15, material non-compliance with applicable legislation, and he refers to the Correctional Services Act 1998, and then some of the correctional service centers remain overcrowded. And resulted in the detention of offenders in inhumane conditions. What is the department's approach to dealing with this problem?
Thank you, Chairperson. firstly, to say that it is, of course, of major concern, and it's not something that we can be proud of, the high levels of overcrowding. We are approaching this in a kind of multi-faceted manner. To a large extent, to manage the current numbers, we are saying we are dependent on cooperation with the Department of Justice, the NPA, magistrates and prosecutors and so on. So a lot of our focus is really to work with our colleagues in these departments to make sure that we use legislative provisions to keep the numbers down. And we've been quite successful. I mean, if we look at the numbers that we have been able to divert from imprisonment to non-custodial options, we've been able to do so, but not to the extent where the impact on the actual numbers. The only thing I can say in defense is that given the increasing numbers of people who are flowing, if only our efforts, if it wasn't for our efforts, of course, the overcrowding figures would have been much higher. As you're also aware, the major reason for overcrowding is on the side of the waiting trial detainees. I need to report that historically we've accepted that DCS is not really the responsible department for awaiting trial detainees, but we've since accepted on the instruction of Cabinet that we should lead as a department to bring to develop such a multi-pronged strategy. We do have a project as an integrated justice system to do exactly that, Chairperson, and we will have some changes that will bring a major difference, including the possibility of dedicated remand detention systems and development thereof. The other part of our strategy is to ensure, of course, that we do not use imprisonment as a first resort. There are many people who should not be in prison in the first place. We can see the report of the inspecting judge yesterday that was discussed at the portfolio committee. You would notice the large number of people coming into our system, and they simply just don't come back because their cases are falling away. And we're saying, why was it necessary in the first place for them to come into that kind of traumatic situation? I've already also spoken about our infrastructural development program. It's another part of our response to it. But for the moment, we largely dependent on measures, legislative measures, to get people with bail, low numbers of bail, out of our system, and to put alternative conditions into place.
All right. And of course, when you release some of these people, unfortunately, they go and commit criminal activities, and or we also scream at you for releasing. So I think one does appreciate the situation you find yourself between the rock and the hard place. But we do need to find solutions to these challenges. Yes, completely.
I appreciate your answer, Commissioner, because it's a serious challenge, and we really have sympathy for you, because you, as you know, this overcrowding will also have an impact on the humane conditions surrounding the inmates, and it may very well have an effect on the health of the inmates, and result in a possible increase in your medical bills. So that's one of the spin-offs. But thank you so much. Can I go to your page 23, where you talked about the total inmate population, about a third who's awaiting trial, detainees, ADTs, and you talk about the remand detention project. Can you give us more details on these initiatives to assist with the overcrowding?
Very briefly, Chairperson, as I've indicated, the remand detention project is a multi-sector attempt to address the problem involving the Department of the Criminal Justice System on the one hand, but also on the other hand, the work to be undertaken by DCA specifically to address the current situation within our department. As I've said, the remand detention system is to put in place protocols, processes, that all departments where remand detainees are being kept should abide by in order to ensure that we speed up the process of getting them through the system. On the other hand, it's really to improve the conditions under which the waiting trial inmates are being held, and then to look at alternatives to incarceration itself and the more effective utilization of those alternatives. Those are the dimensions of the remand detention project that we're considering.
All right. To page 42 of your annual report, again on ATD, your target was effective management of offenders and awaiting trial detainees. Your actual target, actual performance outcome policy has been developed, but is due to be finalized. If I understand it correctly, you developed the policy, but you have not finalized it. Have you finalized the program, the policy since then?
Can I have your mic on, please?
I'm saying if I can just get a moment to see on my list of approved policies whether that particular one has been finalized. What I can confirm is the offender rehabilitation part has indeed been finalized, and we're busy working on that. But if my colleagues can just, in terms of the list, I think we're referring to the correction of policy and finalization.
No, no, no. Let's continue as somebody checks whether it is in the list or not. I mean, that's what we want to check. Yes, yes, comrade.
Thank you. So if you can just tell us on the ORP whether that's been finalized, that is a key issue. And this morning there was, yesterday there was a published report, an annual report to the Judicial Inspectorate of Prisons. We haven't seen this report. I don't know if other members of the committee have seen this report. And they, it was reported in the news media this morning. And it's quite a devastating report from the media report. And I think either we as SCOPA have to scrutinize this report or the portfolio committee and just follow up on the findings of this commission. I don't want to go into details, but they talk about the 10,000 inmates who could not pay bail of less than 1,000 rand and at a cost of 2.34 million to the state, to your department. And they also mention on overcrowding some serious issues. I don't think we have the time to go into it. But on the issue of overcrowding, we cannot overlook that report. And either of the two committees have to engage with your department on this annual report. I don't know what if you want to make a comment on this.
No, I think we have been part of the meeting yesterday where the findings were made known. I think we're appreciative of the analysis in there, and we will certainly engage with the portfolio committee.
Thank you, Chair. Can I go then to your public-private partnerships? Now, on page 70 of your annual report, you have a very good paragraph and description of what exactly is your the situation with your two APOPs, and that you have in the two APOPs 5,952 inmates. We discussed earlier there are five more prisons being planned through this route of APOPs with another 15,000 inmates, if I understand your explanation correctly, and also the announcements by Mr. Manuel last week. Also on page 84 of your annual report, you also give quite a detailed description of this public-private partnerships. What does the private party have to do in this partnership? And more importantly, on page 120 of your report, you also give in your notes the terms of the arrangement, and most interestingly, what the contractor's obligations are and what your department's obligations are. I see the contract fee is based on two components, the fixed component and the index component. And the index component is escalated every 6 months. I hope you've done your homework, financial homework, to make sure that the escalation, you're satisfied with that. My question really is, once your department determines which services and outputs you want and are needed, then probably the next step will be for you to see whether you can deliver those services and outputs yourself. If you can do it, you go ahead. If you cannot do it, you will probably go out on tender. And this is what happened with the two APOPs and another five in the pipeline. So I assume that you've done your homework very thoroughly and you've decided the way to go in future is the route of PPPs. I just want to confirm with you that is the road that you're going to travel in future. Have you considered any other possibilities how to deal with this problem apart from building more prisons and more prisons and more prisons, whether it's PPPs or state-built prisons? Have you discovered any other possibilities, either internationally experiences or in your own department, how to address this problem of facilities?
Thank you, Chairperson. Indeed, a very comprehensive question that will keep us busy for quite some time, but I'll try and be brief and say that indeed the decision to go the route of procuring these facilities through the PPP route was taken after we had a comprehensive feasibility study conducted by an external service provider. And the outcome of that was interrogated by different role players in government, including Treasury and Public Works and DCS, and a very rigorous process that led us to confirm the recommendations of the transaction advisor. The second part of the question is, yes, indeed, I agree with you, Mr. Kornhoff, that we're not going to build ourselves out of this problem, and we need to come up with clear alternatives. One of the issues that I've started to engage with Professor Charles Delia at UNISA has been looking at, again, reopening the debate on electronic monitoring on the one hand, and I'm quite keen to push that debate for us to look at. That is it. We also believe that the major part of the solution is in building confidence amongst the judiciary and the public that non-custodial sentencing punishment can indeed be an effective punishment for certain categories of offences. And I think through one of our areas of focus of improving that area of work, we need to build that confidence and we need to use that a lot more readily. And we are engaging with the judiciary and the magistracy around those issues. And lastly, I'm saying that we need to make clear distinctions because we do have different kinds of people within our system. And not all of them need to stay there for such long periods. And we have this, I'm very pleased to say, agreed with our amendment bill, agreed on the concept of an incarceration framework. And we hope that with that incarceration framework, it will give us greater flexibility to target very specific categories in order to begin to address this problem on a much larger scale.
All right. Just to say, of course, the question of whether the department will go the triple P route as a strategic perspective, it's a policy choice. And I think it is a matter that the portfolio committee can engage in. But I do remember that your predecessor was engaged by this committee around the question of the triple P in terms of the extent to which it is cost effective. And the word that he gave us very explicitly was that from where he was seated and the investigations that he has done or the research that he has done was that it was actually not a favorable arrangement for the state in terms of the money that the state has to utilize. And I do think if we can get those transcripts that this committee expressed itself very strongly on this matter. So if for some reason at some point the department has come to a position that says this is the most desirable route to take for
from where I'm seated, it will represent a substantive policy change, but also it will represent a change in the direction that I think from a financial point of view, we as a committee have not really been impressed about. But I do believe that in terms of the actual debate around those issues, it is a matter that the portfolio committee could do us a favor and you know, pick it up. Because what we're interested in is to ensure that the money that the state has is utilized most efficiently, most effectively, and in the best interest of our country. And the experiences with the two prisons that are there, from where we're seated, we might not give him all the information that he has. I don't think that it has been the most positive thing. But like I say, I think the policy matters. We're not debating policy issues at our level, but I suppose the portfolio committee is better positioned to engage with you in terms of those matters. Commissioner Coronel?
I'm very happy with your response that you're looking at alternatives than building more and more prisons. I think it's innovative, and I think we as members of parliament will support you in that, to find more ways to deal with a very complex problem. And I think you need to be congratulated and encouraged to carry on your research to find new solutions. PPPs and another, if I'm correct, your department is the first. You're breaking new ground. As far as the PPP is concerned, with the government department building prisons. It's one of the first government departments that going into such a large-scale PPP that, from National Treasury side. So it's a learning curve. But, of course, as you state in page 120, the terms of arrangement is for a long time. It's 25 years. And if you make a mistake here in the beginning, in your signing, is going to carry with you for a very, very long time. So I really trust and hope that you have the financial expertise and the consultant and the advisors to go into such a deal very open-eyed and wide awake, that you do get value for money at the end of the day. Because a PPP is nothing else than a commercial leaseback. And the developer normally makes the money out of that. But there's also benefits for you at your department, not only financial benefits, but also other benefits like rehabilitation that we discussed earlier. The situation of overcrowding may be a benefit, I don't know. You need to determine. The repayment will probably include capital repayment, not only upfront capital outlay by your department, and maintenance. I would assume maintenance is also included in the triple P. So there may be pros and cons. What we want to know is that you've done your homework, and over a 25-year period that you've committed your department, there's value for money. That's the bottom line.
Chairperson, no, thank you for those inputs, Mr. Kurnov. I submit that it is quite a bold move. We have, as I've said, fortunately, we have Treasury and the PPP unit in Treasury being quite central to driving this process with us, together with other experts. We are continuing to engage to ensure how we reduce the cost. Treasury has indicated that they will make bigger upfront capital payments in order to reduce the cost. It's all about the issues of time, value for money, and you would be more familiar with those concepts. But we'd be quite willing to engage the portfolio committee on the substantive issues there.
Yeah, I see that Comrade Kurono, if I can ride on your back, on page 120, 27.2, the contract fee. Just a little bit of information. The contract fee is split into two components. There's a fixed component, which will remain the same for a period of 15 years. And there's an indexed component for each year, which is escalated on review, on each review date every 6 months. what is involved and what does this mean in financial terms?
Jefferson, I would ask the DC responsible to provide some of the detail, but the fixed component would largely relate to the infrastructure component, and the other one relates to the operational cost and expenditure.
No, that's fine. I have an idea of what it's all about. I don't want you to go into the actual length of sense for each of the prisons.
No, I think if you don't answer the question here, I think you need to answer the question at the portfolio committee, because both the chair and I asked the same question. Your index component is revised every 6 months, but we don't know what percentage is the CPIX. Why is it biannually, every 6 months rather, and why not an annual term? And then your contract spends over when does it? The building, the facility falls back to your department. Is it 25 years or is it 15 years? It's a huge difference if you calculate backwards to your current value. And it can cost the department or it can cost the developer. So it's fine-tuning that we don't have to discuss here, sir. But I think we need the assurance that the homework has been done and that the government money spent on private prisons is value for money. That's the bottom line. We want to, and isn't it value for money, you're going to come back to this committee and you're going to appear here again. And we will go into the details of this report on page 120 to unpack that for the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Thank you, I hear you. Just a response to the earlier question about the policy and procedure on correctional programs, it's indeed been approved, both the policy and the procedures. The procedures only in October this year. It's now been corrected.
All right. I would like us to wrap it up. If I'm going to allow Honorable Trent, Comrade Pierre, Comrade Fouquet. No. He had indicated earlier on that he had one or two questions that you wanted to ask. No, I see three hands. It's your hand, it's Comrade Pierre, and it's Trent. And then, lastly, I will, of course, as the tradition allows, the chairperson of the portfolio committee. Let me start with you, Comrade Fouquet. Yeah, okay. Comrade Pierre?
Okay, thank you. Mine is on the ACOPS. I don't know if Eddie's one is on the ACOPS. Maybe not for the details now, but Chair, we had, as you mentioned, a discussion if you look at the transcripts of this ACOPS thing last year as well at the hearing. And in your report, this report is 8 times being mentioned of your ACOPS thing. But nowhere in your annual report is anything mentioned that you are planning new ACOPS. And I found that very strange because, I mean, this is a significant amount of money that is going to be spent by your department. And I would have thought that at least there would have been mention made in your annual report of the intention to do so. And also, you know, the two ACOPS that you've got, which caters for 5,952 inmates, you've paid over 558 million, which works down to about 257 rand a day per prisoner. Now, last year, the figure per day was 123 rand per prisoner, and the previous year it went up with 9 rand. So,
it's more than doubling what you're paying for these certain fees and what otherwise. My question is, when I look at this stuff, you mentioned the feasibility study. Now, I'd like to know where in your annual report, where did you budget, where did you figure that you budgeted for the feasibility study? Because obviously it costs money. And you mentioned some taxation advisor. Who was the taxation advisor? Where was the taxation? How much did it cost? And there was also the issue of the interest rates, which was very dark. There was no fixed interest rates. In other words, it goes up, you pay more. From time you pay less, you see the difference. Talking about this kind of money. So, and the other issue that was raised regarding ACOPS is it was also came out in the hearing that some of your senior staff actually went over and became
follows 500 of these staff, the other ones follow. What guarantee do we have that it's not going to be the same situation? What guarantee do we have that the people sitting in the top management are not going to go over to the next hospital again, become directors or whatever, and actually design it for them? And the last thing I have is, in that hearing, your CFO or engineer or whatever said, in the charge of that the remaining contract is 17 years, yet in your annual report, on 122, you said two obligations for the remaining period of 19 years. So you see, all these figures that we are dealing with, the last thing that we've done is also some of the directors of the current 2A box are overseas people, who come from America, some are from the UK. We'd like to get some clarity on that.
What the situation is going to be, if there's any stipulation going to be regarding South Africans. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, with respect, I think it will possibly be foolhardy to engage on the level of detail, considering that a lot of what's been said contains some assumptions that we need to unpack. So I don't want to be disrespectful to the member, and just to get clarity about how we proceed. Quite a series of issues raised. And I don't want to stop and find. So either we provide some of this information in writing back to the committee, if that's the first, and then we debate the issues back to the portfolio committee. But yes, I would want to be more responsible for how I respond to that.
All right, now that's fine. Honourable Trent?
Steve, I'll tell you why I wanted to come back, because you know, in this report we have scope of resolutions, and I think that that's very important, and I want to congratulate the department for actually dealing with that, because, you know, we don't take these resolutions just for, you know, fun and games. We actually want to see something done. But I do want to raise it until office with a whole lot of areas were covered in those resolutions. But I just really want to come back, if I may, to the asset management. You told us the following. You said that a project to verify commenced in November 2006, okay? You then said 80% of the centres have done the verification. This is what your response to scope is. And I just want to know, is that true or not? And if not, you know, what is the situation? Then we leave alone this one, because you told us that you've been granted approval by a national strategy, so I assume that. But then what you've also done, you've given us some time frames there which concern me. You've said, first of all, you said the following. You envisage that the first sites will migrate to Lovis in November 2007. Well, we're in November already now. And then you went on to say, and the entire department will be on Lovis by March of next year. Now, you know, we don't want you to set yourself unrealistic goals. But, you know, I'd like you to have to come back as next year. All I'm asking is, are they online?
Honourable Trent, what page are you reading from?
I'm sorry, we are on page 73.
Alright.
Scope of resolution. Those are time frames which we've been given, and I didn't see them coming through in my questioning. And I you know, look, if you can't do it, well, that's fine, then just tell us. But I mean, these are, you know, we took a decision, Chair Scoper, that we were going to ask for contracts so we can, you know, measure whether you're actually achieving what you said. So I just want to ask, have they been achieved or not? Or are they going to be achieved?
Chairperson, as I've indicated, we've covered part of the debate, but I don't want to repeat. And we have made some successes to the extent of more than 90%. And 100% in some instances when it comes to the capturing of assets. The project team on the migration to Logos, we are behind some of the initial targets that we've set, and hence we've adjusted the targets on the basis of the work that we completed up to now. And therefore can quite firmly say that 48% of the centres we will migrate in February, as reported earlier. So it really varies. I'm saying that some of the issues that you've raised, we've made some progress, but if you want to engage in the detail, we can do so. But the steering committee leading this project can give the specific terms.
Yes, Chair, I'd just like to have a revision of those target dates for us, for our purposes. And then, Chair, just one final, it's on performance information which concerns me. During the 2005-2006, the Auditor General raised a number of issues related to performance information. And he said it included poor alignment between planning, etc. And then you are saying, and this is in your report on page 72, there are plans to develop procedures to enhance delivery of performance information. Now, member Quinoff actually raised that yourself about the measurement of performance. So on the basis of that, I did a little exercise. I took program one, and that's your administration, and I found there that of the 32 issues you raised there as targeted issues, if you want to try and 13 of them are neither measurable and therefore cannot be. They're simply not measurable. And only 8 of them were measurable. Okay? And the good news is that the 8 that were measurable, you actually achieved your target. But it just worried me that, you know, it's not. And then I thought to myself, well, let me just look at one of them and just to see how important this is. Now, just the alignment with planning and budgeting. And then I went to Program 7, which Comrade Kurinov was talking about. And the situation there is, and that's your planning with your job and your underspending, your main underspending of 25%. Okay? And only 3 of your 15 objectives there are measurable. Now that tells me a story, Jim. Now, my question is very simply, are you going to give more attention to these matters so that in future your objectives are both measurable and that we can then see what you've achieved in terms of those measures?
I very appreciate it, Chair.
Thank you very much. Yeah, no, I'm thinking one other good trend and giving you the platform to respond.
Yes, indeed, I'm really grateful for the extent to which you've gone into the measurability issue. We've made this a very high priority within the meeting. We've embarked on the process of improving the development of our indicators, measurable indicators, and of course ways in which those indicators would be measured. A project that we have started together with the technical assistance unit in Tresby. So I'm quite excited about that, so that we can overcome some of the poor targets and planning problems that we've highlighted. We are monitoring and evaluation system. We have, again, with the Tresby technical assistance unit, a dedicated focus on that. But we've also seen that many of our problems is because of poor project management, understanding and processes, and therefore the ability to translate this into measurable targets and goals. As we've seen, a number of the issues we've come across us being unable to report on the extent to which we have made certain gains. So that environment is receiving really high priority attention, I can assure you, Mr. Chen. And our planning cycle for the forthcoming year, we hope to begin to implement some of those improvements.
All right. Thank you very much. Anything from there?
Yeah, Chair, I just wanted to put Honourable Trent's mind at rest. There's a guideline out by the National Treasury now on exactly how to determine pre-objectives, what the measurements should be, and we will be auditing the predetermined objectives according to that guideline. So it's a very comprehensive document.
Right, thank you very much. Before we come to the end of this session, can I allow the Chair of the Portfolio Committee, Comrade Bloom, to have a minute or two? Having sat patiently, pen and paper in hand, throughout the 3 hours that we have been sitting here.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chair. You know, that's one thing that in my organization got missing. The word comrade to another comrade. And I'm very much happy that you are stressing that thing. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, you know, I want to thank you for the invitation.
Last year, I attended this meeting with two members. Today, I'm here again with two members. And I can tell you, Chairperson, after that meeting last year, the two members came to me to say, Chairperson, you know, thank you very much for inviting us to the meeting of SCOPA. I will read to you a note what one of these members wrote to me now, Chairperson. Thanks for deploying me here. You have helped to grow and to realize what is expected of the department in terms of accountability. It's Nkosi Kol. So I am very much impressed, Chairperson, with the work you are developing in this institution. You are developing very good leaders so that people must understand. And I'm telling you, since that meeting last year, the two comrades were very sharp, very sharp, out of this that meeting last year. Unfortunately, one of them passed away on Monday, Comrade Nawa, passed away on Monday. But the work that you are doing, Chairperson, and the members here, I really appreciate and value the work that you are doing. Chairperson, let me say, last year you raised, and members raised, the issue of the list of people who were involved. And I think Mr. Gerber raised it now again. You raised it earlier on. And I'm very much disturbed, Chairperson, to hear that that list, the department has not submitted that list up until today. It is unacceptable to me, Chairperson, that if a parliament or a committee is requesting something from the department, then the department must not respond to that. You see, according to me, it boils down to contempt, because it's a year now that you have asked, and members of this committee have asked, that report, that list. You have also now raised another issue of consultants, and I want to add it now to that list of last year. We must also ask a list of the consultants doing work for the department. I am suspecting that some of the former or ex-members of the department are also involved in doing consultancy for the department. I will ask the department, through you, Chairperson, to also submit a list of the consultants doing work for the department. But, Chairperson, we must not stop there. We must come with time frames to say to the department, the list of last year, we are giving the department 7 days to submit that list of last year. Because it's now 1 year, 7 days that we are giving them. It's a year that you are waiting for that list. And I think 7 days, they must submit that list. The other list of the consultants, we can give them 3 months to submit that list of the consultants. After that, we will follow up. Why did they not have submitted that list? I want to assure Mr. Smith, Mr. Kuonoff, who have pointed at me, yourself, Chairperson, that from the portfolio committee side, we will follow up each and every issue that you have raised here. We will. I've asked my secretary there, Cindy, to point each and everything. We are going to set up, I can tell the commissioner now, that will be our program next year, to follow up these issues that you have raised in this meeting. But thank you very much, Chairperson, for the invitation. I'm more empowered than yesterday. I can assure you that I will be more vigilant, more productive in the work that that we are doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Comrade Bloom. I think the list of consultants, I don't think you need 3 months to compile that list. Certainly a few days would do. Just consider the list and send it through before we arrive. What is today, Wednesday? Yeah. By sometime end of next week, if we could have it, it would... I however do want to acknowledge that after our engagement, the list of officials who negotiated on behalf of the department, I got a list that the then acting accounting officer also confessed that she was not comfortable with that list because there were glaring errors where a nurse and a priest were included in that list as part of the negotiators. It was revised, another list was sent to me, which she too still was not happy about, and she was to continue further seeking assistance because documentation, she said, was not in place. Documentation, there were no documents, no documentary evidence. They had to rely on the memory of some of those people who were there. So, yes, it is an issue that would commissioner say, can you follow it up and provide us with that information, and then we can take it up from there. But thank you very much, and we wish all of the best. We have no illusions about the challenges in front of you. Fortunately, you took that responsibility, fully aware of the issues at hand, and we can only wish you the best in correcting correctional balance.
Chair,
can we please bring this to a close, Honorable Trent?
Yes, sir. I just want to inquire, we're now going to have supper.
we'll